Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm airing an interview I did with Catherine Michelle Tanner, the quintessential artist. Currently, you can see Catherine exhibiting her acting artistry, and it is quite something, in a production of the Amish Project. It is a one-person show in which she plays seven distinct characters, and there are a number of tangential characters. They stopped counting at 24, I believe she says, at the Banyan Theater in Sarasota, Florida. It's quite a story. Hang on. Here come the show.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from the voice. Oh, you really can. Deeper, deeper down
is about being the person you really are. Being the person who has access to everything that you were born with. So what does that mean? It means that it seems as though we come into this life with certain abilities, interests, curiosities. Of course, these are quite affected by the environment into which we are born. So if you were born into a family that is musical, it's possible, likely, that you might, notice all the qualifications here, be interested in music. For example, I interviewed a classical pianist who tells me that her family lived in essentially one room, and a lot of it was covered by the grand piano, and her cradle was underneath the grand piano, and essentially her entire life was imbued with this music. It was a part of her complete environment. She was not ever without it, so it's not surprising that she grew up to be a musician. Another musician, his cradle was his mother's guitar case, which sat on the stand while she played. So there's that influence, but it seems that we also have influences which are not obvious. So that someone coming from a blue-collar family will be passionate about music or art or drawing. Lynette Jenkins Wisner, who was the oldest child of nine in a very poor black family in Manhattan, who it turns out could play whatever she could hear by the time she was three on the piano. So some of this is not clear or obvious, but seemingly it is there. As a therapist, I believe that ideally we are each encouraged to learn, find as early as possible what it is that works for us. What are the things that draw us, compel us, that we're curious about, that we're interested in? What are the skills or qualities or attributes? Are we forthright? Are we curious? Are we whatever it is that we are? It's my belief that the family is supposed to nurture that. And then one grows up being who one really is. Unfortunately, also as a therapist, it's very clear to me that this not only doesn't always happen, it seems to rarely happen. What happens instead is that families, teachers, our culture, our religion, have ideas about who we should be and who we shouldn't be. And if it happens that you are a very curious person, everything interests you, you're into everything, and you have a family that feels that this is an ugly attribute, that this is dangerous, or that you might get into trouble, or that people will not like you because of it and they're embarrassed by it, then they try and shut that down. They try and shut down who you are. And sometimes it comes, as I'm implying, from a benevolent impulse. It would be dangerous for you to be going through the trash or talking to that strange person. Sometimes it comes from ignorance. But whatever it comes from, when you are stifled, when you get the idea that the you that you are is not okay, children are not able to tolerate that. And most of us try and pretend that we're not that. Some rebel and try and make it even larger, but most don't. Most try and pretend they are not whatever it is that's bringing a consequence that they don't want. Criticism, neglect, chiding, embarrassment, punishment, and sometimes, unfortunately, abuse. So if you are good enough at pretending that you aren't what you are trying to pretend that you're not, then what we quite often do is we forget that we are that. And we come into adulthood with a limited amount of information about who we are and a limited access to all of who we are. The Lynn Show is about saying, if this happened to you, it may not be too late to recover what you were forced to hide or deny. If you are interested in this, if this is triggering something for you and you want to talk about it, you can reach me at my website, thelynnshow.com, thelynnshow. Don't leave the E out of Lynn, you'll get a different Lynn. There's a button on my website that says email me. You can click on that and email me anything, questions, comments, curiosities. You can get me to come and speak to your group or organization. You can get access to my book, which is called When You Can, You Will, Why You Can't Always Do What You Want to Do and What to Do About It, which is obviously about why people cannot change even when they want to, even when they think they must have to, and what you can do about that. Oh, and you can get access to the podcasts from this show. All of the interviews I've ever done are up there in podcast form. You just click on search and ask for the person you want to listen to or the kind of person you want to listen to, because I interview people who make their living or their life with an art. So you could click on musician or fine artist. Of course, you'd have trouble finding, well, I don't know how she's categorized up there, the person whose interview I'm playing today, Catherine Michelle Tanner, who is everything. She's an actor, she's a dancer, she's a musician, several different instruments, she's a painter, she's a teacher, she's a writer, she's a singer, she's a songwriter. You name the art and Catherine is it. I interview people who make their living or their life within art, as I explained at the very beginning of this interview with Catherine, because when you listen to these people, you can hear what it sounds like to be who you really are. And Catherine Michelle Tanner is one of the lucky ones. You will hear why it is possible for her to have access to every single thing that she is. And you can hear the glorious joy that comes from that. So here now, Catherine Michelle Tanner. I interview people who make their living or their life with an art, and I always ask them the same question, and it is, how did it start? And I don't mean when you got your first job, I mean the very first moment in life that you thought actor, performer, singer, dancer, entertain, any of that. Do you know?
Yes. There were a few reoccurring events that kind of all led up to a sum. But for me, when I was in elementary school, I wrote an essay, and I had been a ballet dancer. And
oh, no, go back then. Yeah. Go back to the beginning.
Oh, really?
Right. Well, what are the events?
Well,
and what led you to be a ballet dancer?
Well, my grandmother was a concert pianist, so the classical music was always in the house. And then my older sister had taken dance. And then I begged my teacher, because we were supposed to be 7 when you started, I begged him to let me start at 6.
And you know why?
No, but my mom let me beg him. He was this fantastic ballet master up in St. Paul, Minnesota. And he was like, well, we're going to have to lie about our age. And I was already petite to begin with.
You still are.
So, right?
Well, but, you know, was this just competition with your older sister?
No, my mother had encouraged the arts. My mother had been an actress. Her aunt had been an actress. Her sister is an actress. Her daughter is a musician. My sister is now an actress and still, you know, so it's definitely in our genes. And my father's an artist, right? So they kind of, my mom had stopped acting to become a teacher, but they really encouraged the very open arts in us. Like, we could keep a project going for months, and they wouldn't worry about it being cleaned up. They were really kind of great about that, you know?
Lovely.
And they'd come in and say, how is this going? And I was, like, in fourth grade. but, so the ballet started for me because my mom really encouraged it in piano and voice and violin.
So were you studying all of that?
All of that my whole life, and I still do. I still play piano and violin. In fact, I just played it a couple nights ago. But as soon as I saw a play...
Do you remember what it was?
There were a few. I remember seeing The Music Man at the high school, and I also remember seeing a few plays that my sister had been in middle school. But vaguely, but I remember writing an essay in fifth grade to my principal. It was some kind of an essay about the fine arts. And I won, and what I won was 2 tickets to the Minneapolis Children's Theater Company.
Wow.
And that was a big deal because I was from a small town, Hastings, Minnesota. And my parents drove me up, and I believe my dad went with me. And I could not believe it was a Midsummer Night's Dream by Shakespeare, set in the 60s.
Oh, my God.
Like, with go-go boots. And first and foremost, I didn't know what I was seeing.
Yeah.
And yet again, I could not believe that all of these arts had merged.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
I do.
It was like everything had merged. The history had merged, the costumes, the lights, the dance, the art, the music. I mean, I was like, and I remember coming home and I didn't sleep, and my mom was like, so you apparently liked that. And then I begged to get another ticket for my sister, because I was like, well, she needs to see this.
Oh, my God.
And so my parents bought us 2 tickets and let us go and see it together. And I remember her looking at me going, oh, my God. Like, what is this? It was like a buffet of art.
Yes, it is. What an amazing start.
It was. And then, over the course of the years, I had then pursued more of that.
Well, wait, slow down. Yeah. When you say over the course of years, so now
like
you're in the fifth grade, so what are you, 10?
Yeah, exactly, 11. And then all throughout middle school, I started auditioning for plays and started to understand what it all was. And then when I was in eighth grade, my parents, after a performance I did of Christmas Carol, I played Belle, my parents sat me down, and I told them how serious I was about this.
And now you're how old?
I'm probably 13, mm-hmm. I think, just going to be 14 maybe. And I said, I really, really, really understand you can make a living off this. And they said, wow.
Yeah, right.
That's questionable. And they said, we really encourage you, but we want you to find something also very tangible. Mm-hmm. So they said, maybe education, or maybe, you know, which I then pursued as well over the next high school and college. But this one night, I sat down at the table with them, and they said, we want you to know that you're not alone in this business. On your father's side, Wallace Beery.
Oh, my goodness.
The famous actor is his cousin. And on your mom's side, Chuck Connors, the rifleman. And I was like, who are these people? Like, they chose the same profession I did when, in essence, they blazed the trail, right?
Yeah, right.
So I started to understand it was almost in us.
Yes.
Like, it's...
Oh, that's so sweet of
them.
Yeah. Especially since your mother gave it up to teach.
Yeah, and I really love that they let me find it.
Yes.
And then all throughout high school, I had a couple opportunities to do very professional things, and they chose not for me to do that, which I deeply appreciate because I didn't get burnt out.
Okay, you mean...
For example, I was asked to audition for the Mickey Mouse Club for Walt Disney.
Oh, my goodness.
And I made it to all the callbacks, and then the final one we didn't do because they wanted me to stay in Minnesota and, you know, be a kid. And
and
I was offered a couple roles up at Minneapolis Children's Theater Company, but because I would be taken out of school so much, they said, why don't you just go to school? And I was in the honors program, so it would have been hard to...
Did you mind?
No, I think at the time I felt like I was being gypped. But in hindsight, I can't fathom hitting the ground running as a youngin'.
Mm-hmm.
And then have to parlay that into and translate that into an adult career. Mm-hmm. This way I can go into it the way I want to.
Yes.
And not make some odd transitions. And who knows what would have happened?
No.
You know, I mean, you never know, but I don't think I would have gone down the wrong path of drugs and alcohol and all that. Mm. I'm kind of boring.
Yes.
People are like, what's your drug? And I'm like, Advil. So that, yeah, that kind of found me, and I found it very organically. And then I chose to I had a triple major in undergrad, theater performance, dance performance, and then education.
Good girl.
To cover, yeah. That's for you, Mom.
Right.
So that was good.
Right. So, okay, so that was undergraduate. When you say undergraduate, does that mean you went to graduate school?
I did. I went up to the Oslo Theater Conservatory.
Oh.
And I graduated in 2004.
Oh, my.
So it was lovely. It was great. And all of my professors there, I'm still really close with. And even my classmates, you mm-hmm. know, we're still really close. And we try to...
And you stayed here.
Well, I didn't. I actually was in New York for, right after graduation, we do something called Showcase. So I was living in New York for like 4.5 months. And then some auditions came up for Florida Studio Theater. And I auditioned for Metamorphosis. Mm-hmm. And I had visited back here. My boyfriend was here. We're still here. I came back to visit, and I set up an audition here, and then was called back up in New York, and then kind of got the role via Sarasota and New York.
How funny.
Yeah, and I thought, well, okay, I get it. You know, the big guy could have put me here. And so then it all kind of started to roll that way. Mm-hmm. So I still go up as needed.
New York for auditions.
Yeah, for auditions and, like, right. specific calls.
So you would have to go to New York to audition for a role at FSD?
Well, no, I mean... It just kind of worked out that I auditioned here, mm-hmm. and then they knew I was there for the callback, and then I ended up here again. You know what I mean? Because they were like, "No, where are you?" And yeah, I was like, right. "Well, I'll be in New York for this month." And yeah, it was great.
So you go back and forth.
I did for a long time, and then I didn't have to for a long time. But as things start to pick up again, seasons are getting bigger again.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, theater's really in a healthy spot right now.
Here.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, here. And in the Midwest, like Minneapolis, Chicago, it's real healthy. New York, it's really kind of coming back, you know.
So are you working in the Midwest as well?
Well, I workshopped a piece up there and then brought it back here to Ybor City last year. But I go up as needed, but I haven't really had the, you know, knock on wood, I've been very, very blessed. I've been very fortunate, and I say that with much grace and love, because it's not lost on me how lucky I am. At any moment, I'm so grateful. When I read a script or a play or a screenplay or something that I'm interested in, and I may not morally line up with it, but it is telling a good story somehow in the end.
Yes.
Like, you can't really judge your character. She steals. What is she stealing for? We don't know. Right. Let's find a good reason. It's one of those things where, as an artist, I feel like I have to hold that mirror up to life, too. They spent the time to write this.
Right.
It does tell some message. I may not fully, you know, believe in that moment, but I do feel that this is warranted to be seen. And
what an interesting point of view. And I don't think I've heard anybody talk about this quite in this way. The dilemma for an actor who's asked to present a case which is diametrically opposed to their own.
It's like being a lawyer.
Yes.
My grandfather was a lawyer, and he said they're not much different. You just have to memorize laws, and you have to memorize lines.
And you have to defend a client even if you're not sure that that client is...
Correct.
Right, innocent, right?
Correct. And...
That's right.
You know, everyone is doing something for a reason, and sometimes people say, oh, that villain was so... I was so empathetic toward that villain, or sympathetic, I should say. And you're like, well...
Good.
That's true. That's the truth.
Right.
It can really be happening. But I do like it if the whole story of itself tells something really worthy. You know what I mean? Versus just that one.
Well, I'm just curious. What did you think August Osage County was saying?
I mean, it flat out screamed it. In so many ways, it is... You have the ability to stop the cycle.
Yes. If you'll take it.
If you'll take it.
And if you don't take it.
This is what happens.
This is what happens. That's
and this
right.
carousel will come around again and again, and it's a crazy fun house.
Right.
And this is what
and
happens.
And actually, it'll get worse and worse.
Yes. And I was just going to say, this is what happens if
you don't stop it. That's
stop
right.
it. And even if you're going to make an ugly mistake, it's yours to make. And there's so many great plays out there nowadays. It's just exciting to take a bite out of it. As an artist, you always want to be fully in your art, but sometimes you have to keep the lights on. You know what I mean? And you have to keep the fridge full. And you have to have your teeth cleaned.
Yes.
It's always so interesting because I always tell young people, if you choose to do this for a living, realize that you also have to live a life.
Yes.
And then they're like, oh, who's going to do those things for you? It's you.
Right.
You're going to pay your taxes. You're going
right.
to, you know, so, but then when you do get the chance to live fully in that art, really live there, you know, give yourself that opportunity.
I think that the point you're making is exactly right, that
Balance.
Yeah. Exactly.
Which, is, I'm still finding it. I'm still, like, I'm going to try to find more balance. Then I'm like, no, I'm not. It's never going to happen. But at least I'm thinking about
it. Well, what would be balance for you? Do you know?
Well, I have spent far too many years not getting back home to Minnesota on a yearly basis. I get back home when I can, which seems to be like every 3 years or 4 years. And I miss big events. I miss my friends' weddings and their children.
Because you're working?
Because I'm working, which I'm grateful to be, but you can't up and leave that.
No. You can't say, excuse me, I won't be here on Tuesday
because...
No,
it's kind of like the ER. You can't be like, oh, wait, can you...
Right.
Yeah, can you suture this pancreas? I gotta go. Yes, that can happen. But, and I'm trying to allow myself a little bit of time. Like, I have April is fairly open for me this year, and I'm trying to organize just maybe a little bit less, which freaks me out because...
Are you talking about work?
Yeah, work and time and concerts and, you know...
Yeah, like, it's very hard because, of course,
you want to
say yes to everything. Yeah, exactly, right.
And I say no to so many things already that saying no to a couple more feels odd, but I do feel like I don't get enough, you know, me refreshing the pot kind of time.
Yes.
Like going back home in autumn, I'm really trying to go every single autumn that I can. Mm-hmm. And if I can't, my friends send me leaves in boxes, and then I throw them around the floor.
I would just like it if you would talk about all the things that you are doing.
I grew up in a very creative household. We talked about that. And it's really a peaceful place for me to live. And I know that sounds maybe nerve-wracking to others or chaotic to others. It's not. I come here and I write. I teach a lot of dance classes here at Soul Studios Dance with Miss Jamie Davis. I just finished doing Buffalo Kings, the world premiere. On Tuesday, I do the play Lark Eden over at Home Resource. I'm constantly writing. I'm constantly keeping journals of things I'm doing. I'm constantly jotting down little ideas for cabarets and different things. And I'm still auditioning. I still go out to, you know, the auditions and film
and
commercial.
And making costumes and making props.
Yes, yes. I just made a bird. I made a bird puppet that I'm so proud of. I made it out of this box of fruit.
Yes, it flies.
It does fly.
It's got wings, and it moves them.
Yes,
right.
And as soon as my friends saw it, they thought it reminded them a lot of The Secret Garden over at the Sarasota Ballet. And I'm like, good, because that's what I patterned it after. Yes, so I'm constantly doing little things. Tonight I'm going to go to the recording studio and write some more music. I'm actually working on my album to release it in 2016.
Oh, album of?
All original material for myself, yeah. And so I did my Christmas album a couple years ago, and now I'm going back to do this new album. Yeah, it's called The Mississippi.
What does that mean?
It's about growing up on the Mississippi River. It's all kind of stories about water and the river. It's so thrilling to me. It's so funny. The older I get and the more my even industry friends talk to me about it, I realize this is how I function. This is how I am. And I do love to take breaks. I love to unwind and take breaks and go out into nature and just not anything. But I was guest lecturing a couple weeks ago about my life in the arts. And it dawned on me, this is it. I spent my whole life wanting to have a life just like this. And then you look up and you're like, I have it.
I have it, right.
Yeah, and I don't think of it as like the next little hill to climb. It's just like, oh, I think my heart
Let's
is...
Let's do that.
Yeah, my heart is tugging on me to do that.
Right.
And it is a little bit trickier as I get older to compartmentalize them, but they just kind of bleed over. I'll work on this prop for a couple hours, and then I go write this song for a couple hours, and then I go take a yoga class for myself, and then I come back, and I got to clean my house and, you know, go to work and go to an audition. Yeah.
In my book, I have a chapter on what I call personal styles. And one of the styles is scattergun.
Ooh, interesting.
You know?
Yeah.
And I say in it that one of the styles is single-minded. That is a person who sits down and does one thing until it's done, mm-hmm. and then it's done, and then they do something else until it's done. And that the conventional wisdom is that that is the way we're supposed to be.
Sure.
In fact, not a large percentage of the population is actually that.
Right.
And some part of the population is scattergun. And scattergun people are people who require the shift of attention.
Yes, yes.
Right.
Yes.
They don't do anything start to finish.
Right.
Unless there's a deadline, and then they finish whatever it is. That's right.
Yeah.
It can be done. But that's not the mode of choice.
Mm-hmm.
The mode of choice is, I have this idea, I work on it for a while, and then I'm sort of done with it, and I segue to something else. And it might be exactly what you're describing.
Yes.
That it might be that you're writing some music, then you're doing yoga, then you're doing laundry, then you're doing, then you're doing, right?
And I know, cooking is never in there.
No. Well, cooking is never in yours, but cooking might be in someone else's.
Right.
And I've not heard a lot of people describe this as you have described it.
Mm-hmm.
Partly, I think, it's because people are embarrassed about it. That
sure.
They think, you know, if
maybe.
What people say to you about, you know, how can you be like that?
Yeah,
right, exactly,
yeah.
Right? Because the conventional wisdom is that doesn't include this.
Right, and you know what's interesting? And I found this out about myself. When I went to grad school, when you're an undergrad, life is like that. I had that triple major,
right.
And I was studying theater, dance, and education, and so I would compartmentalize because of my classes. But then it was okay to just kind of take the summers off and go get work and, you know, go act and whatever. But then when I went to grad school, it was just like this all over again. You have to work on this monologue and this scene and then go be in this play and understudy the Oslo here and then go be on this main stage show. And so at no point in my theatrical life has it ever been any different.
Right.
But I do, and I really encourage, and I do try to explain this part to people. I'm always present in what I am doing. I never have one foot on that other project. And I think that is because I am an actor.
Cool. I think that if you were a biologist, you would be doing this.
Yes.
If you were a, you know.
This is the way it works.
That's the way your mind works.
Totally.
And that point is so important.
Yes.
Because people who are single-minded, if you interrupt them, I like to say.
They get fugazied.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like glasses breaking in their head, you know. They don't know how to get back to it.
Right.
Right? But that's not true for true single-minded people. They are in the thing, then they're out of the thing, and they're in something else.
Yes.
Right?
So it's lovely to give way to myself when I'm acting. Like, when I go and rehearse the show, I rehearse it every day for about 2 hours, and I've been rehearsing it on my own for about 2 months. So I'd say 10 weeks.
Yes.
I did the lines first. But I'm really just in that moment.
Yes.
And I put a sign on the door, and the kids know not to interrupt me. I usually do it in the day, so they're not here. And I don't answer my phone, and I don't get up and treat it any different than I would a
professional.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so then, when I leave that and have to go do these costumes for Pippi Longstocking, these Swedish beautiful costumes, or, you know, make puppets or hats for Mary Poppins.
Or write music, or put the music down.
Yeah,
or, right.
I can be in that moment, too. And when I go to yoga, or when I go take a ballet class, or hit the gym, I do like to unwind there, too.
Yes.
It's both. It's a very peaceful place, the arts world, for me. It's very peaceful.
So now, tell me about the Amish Project.
The Amish Project is this beautiful play that was written by Jessica Dickey, who I had the great fortune of meeting years ago at Florida Studio Theater. And in 2006, the Nickel Mines, Pennsylvania community had a school shooting by a man who came in and took hostage these young girls, and he sent out the teacher and the boys. And he took these girls hostage, and before he could do anything else to them, he killed them and then killed himself. And Jessica Dickey, when she saw that on CNN, she was shocked. We were all shocked, but she was shocked because she grew up right outside Lancaster, Pennsylvania. And so she felt compelled to write a play about that community and what it means to have something so tragic happen and then to have the Amish forgive so quickly and so openly without reservation. And she covers seven characters that I play. I play the wife of the gunman. I play the gunman. I play two of the younger girls who were shot. I play a Hispanic pregnant teenager. There's a large Hispanic population in that area. I play a townswoman who does not have it in her to forgive. She holds this secret, and you understand why afterwards. And she's confused by why they forgive so quickly. And she's very angry, the gunman's widow. And then I also play a town lecturer, a friend of the family. And he conducts the town hall meetings, really, at the firehouse. And he's in his 50s, and he's a college professor of religion. And then I play a lot of other characters. At one point, we stopped logging at, like, 25, because I really play a lot more. But these are the seven mainstays. And it's a reflection and a fictional telling of what it means to this community to have things go so wrong and what we can all do to make things so right. And it's funny, and it's uplifting, and it does not sound as tragic as it is. It's kind of like, years ago, someone interviewed me and said, well, when is it a good time to do a play about a school shooting? And I said, well, it's never a right time to do a play about a school shooting, but it's always the right time to do a play about forgiveness. And then I said, it's like Othello. You don't go to see the murders. You go to see how it happened. You know, it's never a right time to do a play about murders, but we have to hold that mirror up to life and say, this is what can happen if we choose to move beyond this and, you know, to find peace. It's really a beautiful, beautiful play. It's my favorite. I've been trying to tell my friends this lately. What does it mean to own this story now as an actor as to what it meant before? Before there were very insurmountable things that I would be like, how can I do this? It's an hour and 15 minutes.
You know, and the more the interviews would happen, the more stressed I would
get. Right.
They're like, how does it feel? And I'm like,
I don't know.
I've never seen the play. But the one thing that people ask me all the time is, how can you do that play? Because
I haven't seen it.
I'm thrilled for you to see it.
Yeah, me too.
And don't read it before.
I'm not going to.
But I said, I am on a very different journey than you're on. And I feel so blessed to be on, to take you on that journey. It's a very different experience. I don't know if I ever do want to see the play, because I want to take people on the experience. I love being your guide. I love to go on that journey. A lot of people have been asking me, what is it like to go back to do a show you've done before?
Mm.
And I've had the fortunate opportunity to do this with Todd twice, actually. I did Proof with him back in 2005 or 2006. And then 2 years later, we remounted the exact same show at the exact same theater with the exact same cast. And the set was a little bigger. We made it a little bit bigger this time. And I thought, what a luxury to be able to come at this again 2 years later. And how do I keep it fresh from what it was then? Because the audiences are different. They may have a different memory in their head. They may have told their friends to come see it. With the Amish Project, it just broke through to me on Friday and Saturday this week when I did this. Because I've been journaling a lot about what it's like to come back to this now. And for me, I have had people tell me the impact it's had on their life. A lot of people drove from far off, 3.5 hours one way to come see it. They heard about it. And then got in their car and drove home that same night.
Wow.
And I was just like, oh my gosh. And I hear these testimonials about what their experience was with this play. And that's rare when you're doing the play, but it's not rare after the play is closed. A lot of people, you know, you read things or, you know, mail that people email you. And for me, I've grown as a human being in, you know, immeasurable ways. And my life has changed. You know, when I did it, my father had not passed the original time, and now he has passed. So it's different to say these lines about your father in passing. And it's very different to consider that. I was also not an aunt back then. And so now to think that my little niece, you know, who's just going to be one in, you know, in June, that it's thrilling to think that I have this kind of small little legacy to leave her and my family, and how the world has impacted us all so differently. These images that we see on television are just horrific with ISIS and with all the other things that happen domestically and abroad. And then to be in this community, here I am in the middle. You know, people don't realize, but Soul Studios is right across from Yoder's. So I look out my window and I see the Amish people in Pinecraft all day long. All day long! And I'm like, I have a bonnet, I have two outfits, I have an apron and a pinafore.
That's right.
I have
You're
a bike.
Right at home.
I have a bike. And I'm like, I don't have a horse and buggy because I can't in this community. But I do walk over there a lot, and I am friends with a lot of this community. And I'm not sure if they know about the play. I don't really talk.
And you don't wear your bonnet.
No, I don't. I that would be kind of posing.
Yeah, no, right,
you know what
right.
I mean? But I immerse myself in the community because I'm here. It's like amazing. And so for me, things have changed in these immeasurable ways, and yet things have deepened in immeasurable ways.
And you have changed.
I have changed. And you can't, you know, Todd is going to have changed. We
yes.
haven't really caught up, and, you know, I haven't seen him in a while, but I will have then seen him in less than a year, because he left in July, and I will now see him in a week. And so it's exciting to be in this new place, in this new community.
Yeah.
And what's gone on lately in Oklahoma with the whole, you know, fraternity house thing and, you know, all that. And so these little moments of where do we need forgiveness in our lives, it's everywhere.
That's right.
It's everywhere. And so it's so thrilling to kind of be a part of that. And Jessica and I have emailed since. She's since done the play. She just did it in Boston this last fall. And I'm sure other places are going to be doing it, you know, soon. But it's thrilling to be a part of this script that is so powerful. And I think also in a way, doing this play the first time, because I had never done a one-woman show, And then I ended up writing a lot after doing this show. Mm-hmm. Something happened where I was like, maybe I should try writing. Maybe I shouldn't try writing. Maybe I should try collaborating, which we did.
Yes,
you and I did. An Invisible Me, and that was so beautifully crafted by all of those artists and very well received. And I think that now there's a new risk, a new challenge, and I think I can't squelch that impulse anymore. And I think this play really was the turning point for that. And I do miss my dear friends when I did it, my understudy and my companion, Molly Healy and Stephen Ray. He was my stage manager. He will be coming to Maryland as well. So, you know, kind of we'll be back together. But people don't realize I can't get in my own Amish costume by myself. There's no zippers. There's nothing.
I have to
be fastened into
it.
Oh, my God. So, like, knowing that I have to have help getting dressed in this dress, and Molly won't be there. I'm like, Molly! So, we've been kind of getting in touch back and forth, and before each show, I'm going to text her, and she's always there with me, because she went on that journey with me, and she was the only one in the room for weeks, and then suddenly there were a lot more people in the room, and, you know, I was like, cast party, and they're like, okay, it's just me.
Cast party! Yeah, like,
a glass of wine in the bathtub, you know, I don't know. But, like, you know, it's a lovely challenge, and, you know, I've mentioned this before to people, but I love to do things that scare me, because I'm kind of not like that in my beat. I mean, I'm not like a wallflower or anything, but I just kind of like to put my risk in my art. I love that. And then I like to live a, you know, fairly, I don't say meek or modest. I do live a modest lifestyle, very modest. But I do find if I'm going to risk something, I want to risk it in my art. Because who knows what this could open to send a message to somebody else.
Well, and not only that, but how it can cause you to grow.
Yeah.
You know?
That's that inexplicable thing.
Okay, so now, I didn't know until you told me a little while ago how many times you're doing it and where. So, please tell.
Sure. I'm doing the play. I first did it at American Stage back in 2 years ago, 2013,
mm-hmm.
and 12-13, and we were very reticent because of what happened in Newtown, Connecticut. And I always knew I wanted to do it, but the board was very concerned, and there was a lot of meetings, etc. And Todd kept asking me, he's the director, Todd Olson, he said, are you up for this? I said, bring it on, mm-hmm. I'm up for it. And I did it there, and then over the last 2 years, we've been working very hard to get it around the United States. And it's been both...
Who is we?
Todd and I have been working hard. He's since left American Stage and gone on to a new job at the Columbia Festival of the Arts in Columbia, Maryland.
Yes.
And so about a year and a half ago, he contacted me and said, I got us a booking. We're going to Oklahoma City Rep in Oklahoma. So I will be in Oklahoma City. I leave the 29th of March. And I rehearse it for basically a week and a half, and the Night Attack a week and a half after Easter. And the show opens on the 9th. I do a preview on April 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th. And on the 13th, I fly to Maryland, and I don't really rehearse. I mean, I kind of rehearse it the 14th and 15th of April. And then I do a bunch of shows the weekend from the 16th through the 19th. Yeah, there's quite a few shows in Columbia, Maryland. And then I will be taking myself on a quick 2-day excursion all by myself to see Washington, D.C. I'm going to go stay with my friend John and see our fair nation's capital. I've never been, and I'm only like 45 minutes away.
Mm-hmm.
So I will be doing this in April, from basically the, you know, the 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th, and then again the 16th, 17th, 18th, and 19th.
And then
I come back to Sarasota. I do Pippi in May. I do a whole bunch of other things that I'm writing for children in June. And then I go into rehearsals with the Banyan Theater Company here in Sarasota. And I open the 16th of July. And it runs for 3 weeks up until August 2nd.
Well, all right. So you have a jam-packed next 6 months or whatever it is.
Yeah.
I don't know, it's like 4 months, right? You're right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you again. I'm sure I asked you before, but,
mm-hmm.
and actually we've been talking about it, but But I want to frame it just this way. Mm-hmm. Given all of what you have given to this work as an artist, mm-hmm. and we've been talking mostly about acting, a little bit about writing, a mm-hmm. little bit about music, a mm-hmm. little bit about dance, right? A little bit about teaching. Mm-hmm. What would you say about what that life is like?
Well, it's always a new challenge and a new feeling. I feel that when I'm acting, I can't wait to share a story that is so worthy of having people hear. Like, please come and let's sit in this room for 2 hours, and please get yourself a coffee, and please read the program notes that the director thought of, and please look at this lighting, or no lighting, or chairs, or no chairs, or the rustic backyard of someone's, you know, house, and please suspend your life to hear this story, because it's so worth it. And I love to play. And then I think, I hope that I do that with my students. They tell me I do. But they're hard workers. I mean, there's a lot of work with the play. But what it is that someone always told me, learn the rules like a pro so you can break them like an artist. I think maybe Picasso said that, or at some point maybe his name was attached to that. But that's what it feels like to me. I'm constantly learning this new portion of this moment of art. Like, these costumes are, for me, it's really acting, and what is that message there? What is the action there? And what is this moment that Pippi's looking for in her story? So that when they get up there, they can break it like an artist, and we've really done the work. You know, that would be interesting to ask my friends, too. What is it like to barely see me sometimes? And then I surfaced, like, at a dinner party last night. I surfaced at this dinner party. And they were like, oh, my gosh. I think I wake up every morning excited. I wake up thrilled. There are moments where I feel really blessed to tell the truth, both in my life and on stage. I think that's a huge blessing that I don't think a lot of people get. You know, I think some people have to, you know, push paper around at a desk or a cubicle, and that's cool. That's a different world for them, and they're getting to an end result in a different way, and I think that's super creative as well. But I have to be visceral. I have to be moving and, you know, tactile and touching and creating and finding a new dance step and, you know, I don't know. It's exciting. It's never exhausting. And if it is, okay, here's an example. Mm-hmm. Someone asked me, because they were interviewing me for something, and I said, do you remember when you were a kid? And I hope you do, anyone who's listening. And if you don't, let's get out there and we'll make this happen. Do you remember as a kid where you would wake up in the morning and you'd go out and play, whatever that meant to you? For me, it meant no shoes, playing in the grass of my backyard. And I had a very large backyard, and my dad made me a playhouse with this, you know, trellis, and I had this line of silver maple trees that were my audience, and I had a swing set and a tire swing, and, like, and I would, you know, play all day long. And I would mainly act. I would act out the Boxcar Children or Annie or, you know, something like that a lot. And I would go to this box of costumes, which were old man's clothes usually, and I'd put on this androgynous outfit and run around and create these characters, and then I'd look up, and it was like 5:30, and it was time to come in for dinner. Mm-hmm. I don't even know if I ate lunch. I don't even know. And I was dirty and sweaty and exhausted and so ready to do that all over again. And I would bring my cats outside and use them as horses, and I would play with my neighbors and my sister, and I mean, it was this all-consuming, beautiful experience, but it never really dawned on me it was consuming and exhausting. And at the end of the day, I'd be like, oh, that was awesome. And I couldn't wait to go do it again. Yeah. You know, and I'd have to go and take a bath, and I was dirty, and my mom was like, what did you do all day? And I'm like, it was amazing, you know. And she encouraged it, I think, because she was an actress and she understood that. Mm-hmm. And my dad was an artist and he understood that world. And if I wanted a sword, he'd make me a wooden sword. It was probably not safe at all, but he did. He'd go and carve out this little, it wasn't sharp, it was wooden. But, I mean, it was crazy. It was crazy. And yet I was still very functioning in my, you know, schoolwork and everything else. It was really not just like Wiley time.
No, what it sounds like to me is that you were present in your life every minute.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that, I think, is extraordinarily rare.
I would like not to think so.
I know that, but I think
yes.
It is.
The more I sit at these things, I'm like, I think yes. And there are a lot of stresses and worries sometimes about, you know, this next project, will I get it, will I not get it? Well, you audition and you move on. You can't stress about that. You have to, you know, just find another gig. And you always have to pay your light bill. You always have to pay your mortgage and you have to pay your, you know, car payment and things like that. You just have to find a way to make it happen. And I don't live an extravagant life. I don't go get my nails done. I don't think I've ever had my nails done, except if it's been for a wedding and they do it, or the set, like I'm on a film set and I get lovely nails and my, you know, hair all foo-fooed up. And I don't really go shopping often and get lovely things. I just wear the same old stuff over and over, and who cares? I don't care.
Right.
You know, clearly someone might care, but I don't care.
No, it's not what your life is about.
Yeah,
no.
Yeah, yeah.
No.
And so I'm like, here I am in the same dress again. It's clean, and it's lovely. So, yeah, I am present, and I'm in the back of my mind, there's always some new moment to kind of try out.
And life has always, and it seems clear to me, will always continue to offer this to you.
I hope so.
Oh, I don't think there's any question.
I hope so. And I hope sometimes, like, I think of my niece a lot now, and I, like, years from now, I'd love her to play Pippi, or Annika, mm-hmm. or, you know, Pippi's, you know, the narrator, or, you know, whatever. And I think to my, or she can be a scuba diver, I don't care. She can be whatever she wants to be. But I wonder, I hope that when people see a project that I'm working on, a play or a film, I just got cast in this film that'll be, you know, coming out and soon here. We just wrapped on it. And I think sometimes, I hope people enjoy what I enjoyed in their own way. Or were, I hope it was thought-provoking in a way. I hope they just don't walk away feeling a good time, you know, a good time. I want that too, but I really want them to kind of, I hope the community understands how much I cared about it. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
What seems to me that the two through lines that I hear are the one, which is that you are so present in whatever you do, and minute to minute you are doing something else which you are present in, and mostly they are arts related.
Yeah.
But the other thing is, and maybe I didn't get this right, your powerful desire that what you present has significance.
I hope so. I hope so.
Yeah, that's
because
what I hear.
Because what are we doing? You know, if you know, I always think of, who am I as an artist if I'm not doing something to better or to highlight what it has gone wrong and we need to learn from it? You know, there's a new project I'm writing for next year. I think it might have 5 people in it. I haven't figured it out yet. But one of the lines is, we should have learned this lesson by now.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't learn it yet.
No.
And so we're going
to
go back.
We're going to have to learn it
again. We're going to have to go back and learn it again. And in the Amish project, Jess Dickey writes, there's something about them, that unsettles you. And then he says, I've been studying about them, learning, teaching about them for over 25 years. And it doesn't matter what your faith is or even if you have one, something about them makes you wonder, could I be more? And so I just keep asking myself, can I be more? Maybe not today. Maybe a little less is better today. But tomorrow I can be more. You know what I mean?
Yes, I do. I do. And it's, I think it's a great place to stop.
Good.
Here with the more and more
Good.
And more, Catherine.
Go on there, be more.
Thank you, sweetheart.
Thank you. Oh, my gosh.
So, I hope that you heard what I was hoping you would hear. What I hear when I listen to Catherine Michelle Tanner, and that is what it sounds like when you are so deeply yourself that you can be shifting from one part of yourself to another part of yourself instantly, and it doesn't feel like a burden, and it doesn't feel like chaos. What it feels like is perfectly right. It feels like you. It's energizing. It's life-enhancing. It's joyful. And of course, that's what you hear when you listen to Catherine, the complete joy of being able to be all of who she really is. And so it is my hope that you are inspired by this, that you are asking yourself, is this who I am? Is this what I have? And if it is not, do I want to try and recover some of what I may have lost so that I too can feel the joy of being who I really am? Well, as always, I hope you got something you can use from this show, something that interested you or intrigued you, something that tickled you, made you laugh, inspired you, something that will bring you back, because I will be back next week, same time, same station. And as always, I sure hope you will be too.
See, I'm getting older, my hair is turning gray. Oh, you say my face and figure have both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring, I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go. My shot, my time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage, let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly, well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes, every chance I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight. No, no, we will not go gentle into that good night. And I won't go with a whimper, going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I may not be as juicy, hell, but I still got some tang. So you won't